Chapter 3. Steele's home on Park Avenue near East 79th Street was a security building housing government personnel. Many of the buildings in Midtown were staffed with private security, paid for by the residents to protect their homes and businesses. In the aftermath of the bio war, private security had become a growth industry. Officially, it was regulated by the New York City Police Department, but in practice, the NYPD simply didn't have the resources to do the job properly. There were a number of large, bonded private security companies in Midtown staffed by trained personnel that were licensed by the city, many of them ex-cops and retired military personnel, but the city didn't have the manpower to keep tabs on all the companies, some of which were little more than fly-by-night concerns operating on a shoestring budget. In many cases, especially among those citizens of Midtown who were less well-off, the building residents could not even afford to hire one of the less reputable companies, so they did the jobs themselves or hired independents. Consequently, private security could range from personnel who had retired from the police force or the military to burly dock workers and warehouse men to ex-gang members and criminals who had gone straight, in some cases not entirely straight. In many ways, the situation was not unlike that on the frontier in the 1800s, when ranchers often hired stock detectives and regulators to protect their herds for rustlers. It was often difficult, if not impossible, to check the backgrounds of the people they hired. And many of them didn't even bother so long as they could do the job. Predictably, there were problems, and it was much the same in Midtown. There were accidental shootings, cases where the security guards themselves burgled the residents they were hired to protect, fights, rapes, killings, feuds among competing security outfits, and it was the NYPD's unhappy duty to step in and try to clean them up. But in a city bordered on all sides by areas of lawlessness, the citizenry wouldn't stand for any laws limiting their rights to hire their own protection or to carry guns themselves. Crime was rampant, and no one knew better than the cops that they couldn't do the job alone. With the population decimated by the virus, many of the buildings in the city stood completely empty, havens for criminals and derelicts and screamers. Only a small portion of the subway lines still ran beneath the Midtown area, leaving the vast majority of the tunnels empty, collapsing and falling into disrepair, giving shelter to all sorts of human refuse who scuttled in the dark and came up to prey upon the citizens. The law, what there was of it, could most often be found at the barrel of a gun, and it would be years before the city's population increased to a point where the residents could exercise a greater semblance of control over their environment. In the meantime, they existed in a urban jungle, teeming with predators, with only isolated areas providing any measure of safety. New York, a city that once never slept, now locked its doors and steel shutters tightly every night, counting on those who made their living with a gun to keep them safe. The men on duty at Steele's building were all federal agents, each armed with a 9mm semi-automatic pistol and a 4.7mm battle rifle that fired both shotgun rounds and caseless ammunition. Its select fire system gave the shooter choice of semi-automatic three-round burst or full auto. The security personnel all wore civilian clothing, but they had body armor on underneath their shirts and ties. Most of the people living in the building either worked at the Federal Plaza or in city administration, and it had been a long time since there was any trouble in the building or its immediate environs. Okay. As a result, though they were pros, the security officers had grown a bit complacent. The helicopter assault on Steele's penthouse changed all that. They were all stung by the death of Dr. Susan Carmody and by Steele's own close brush with death. The whip had cracked and security procedures were tightened. They all knew Steele by sight, but even though they'd been briefed about ICE, they still checked with Project Headquarters before admitting him into the building. They took the elevator up to Steele's penthouse apartment, originally used to house visiting VIPs and maintained by the agency. It was a luxurious suite with dove gray carpeting and furniture upholstered in a matching shade. There was a bar in the corner of the living room, paneled in gray marble, and paintings on the walls, abstract art that Steele didn't particularly care for, but he left them where they were. It was a place for him to sleep, no more. It didn't really feel like home. Home had once been an apartment that he'd shared with Janice and their children, but in the last months of their rocky married life, that had ceased to feel like home as well. The pain of their separation was still with him. Janice had never been able to accept what Steele did to earn a living. Their relationship had been based on a powerful physical and emotional attraction, but the two of them had almost nothing else in common. Janice had a craved stability. Life as a cop's wife did not offer much of that. They had started drifting apart after a year of marriage, and then Jason had been born. For a time, he had strengthened their relationship, but then it started to get shaky once again. Then Corey's birth had reinforced it, but it wasn't long before things began to go downhill once more. Their passion for each other was strong to the end, but it took more than passion to make a marriage work. And though they had stayed together for the sake of their children, each year saw them growing farther and farther apart. After Steel was shot down and transformed into a cyborg, it was more than Janice could deal with while he lay in the basement of the federal building, undergoing the long and complex series of operations that had made him what he was now. Janice had divorced him and left the city, taking the children with her. He had no idea where she was, though she had never seen him after he had received his cybernetic brain. She had obtained a restraining order against him, preventing him from trying to contact her or the kids in any way. In her own words, according to Mick Taylor's sister, Shelley, she had not wanted her children to have some kind of robot for a father. And the only other woman in Steel had ever come to care for was now dead as a result of an attempt upon his life. He stepped out onto the balcony and looked down at the spot where she had fallen, struck down by machine gun bullets fired from a helicopter. The floor had been resurfaced. There was no longer any sign of blood or bullet damage, but Steel could still see it, could still see her ruined body lying there in a sea of red, her eyes staring up sightlessly at the sky.
"Where the lady, Dr. Dodd?"
said Ice softly from behind him. "Yeah," said Steel as he looked out across the city and took a long, deep breath.
"She's someone special to you, huh?"
"Yeah," said Steel. "She was someone special."
"Make no difference to her what you were,"
said Ice. Steel turned around. "I think I made a difference," he said. "She was one of the people who made me what I am. Maybe because of that, or maybe in spite of it, but she was able to accept it." He paused. "Which is a lot more than I can say for myself."
"Hey, you be what you are, man,"
Ice said.
"Ain't no use asking questions. Ain't gonna change nothing."
Steel smiled. "Is it really that simple for you?"
"Life's too short to be agonizing over who you are,"
said Ice.
"Man takes what he got and runs with it. Ain't no other way I know."
"I guess there's something to be said for that," said Steel. "You want to go and check out your new apartment?"
"No hurry,"
I said.
"I've been itching to get out for a long time. When are we getting started?"
"Before we do, let's get something straight between us right away," said Steel. "Working with you wasn't my idea."
"I hear that, but the man gave you no choice."
"That's right. Even though I'm not exactly thrilled about it, we're going to have to work together. But I'm going to call the shots. Understood?"
"I hear that too,"
I said.
"But when we out in Harlem, you best let me do all the talking. Ain't no brother gonna give you the time of day to no white policeman."
"All right," said Steel. He walked back into the apartment and went over to a wooden cabinet. He opened it to reveal an arms locker. "You're gonna need a piece," he said. "But if you so much as think about pulling it at the wrong time, I'm gonna make sure you eat it." Ice chuckled.
"Man, don't mince no words,"
he said, walking over to the cabinet. He looked inside.
My. The candy store is open.
He reached inside and took out an old model 1911 A1 45 Colt semi-auto. "Not that one," Steel said. Ice glanced at him curiously. "That one's mine," said Steel. "It was my father's. Put it back." Without a word, Ice replaced the pistol on its hooks. He took out another gun, a large stainless steel 44 Magnum automatic with a 6-inch barrel, a wraparound rubber grip, ambidextrous safety, and combat sights and trigger. It weighed a hefty 60 ounces and held a 10-shot clip.
"This one'll do just fine,"
he said. "You'll find a holster rig for it in the drawer there," said Steel. "Spare clips in the drawer beneath it." Ice took out a Cordura shoulder holster rig, 4 spare magazine clips, and a box of ammo.
"What about a rifle?"
he said. "That's all you get," said Steel. "For now, anyway. Later on, we'll see. Like you said, a man takes what he's got and runs with it."
"Where are we running to?"
asked Dice. "To your old stomping ground," said Steel, walking over to the bar. "What do you drink?"
"Got any vodka?"
"How do you like it?"
"Straight, on the rocks."
Steel poured their drinks and then brought them over to the coffee table by the couch. "You said you knew a lot about Borodini's operations out in Harlem," he said. "Okay then, fill me in." The gypsy cab turned right off of 125th Street, heading toward the waterfront along the Hudson River. Steel and Ice both sat in the back while the driver, a grizzled, skinny old black man in a black leather jacket and floppy leather cap, drove the scarred and battered cab at about 30 miles an hour, carefully keeping an eye on the streets around them.
"Slim and me go way back,"
Ice explained.
"Slim on the War Council of the Skulls when I joined as a kid. Took me under his wing and taught me. Ain't that right, Slim?"
"Took a shitload of teaching, too,"
said Slim from the front seat, his voice sounding hoarse and raspy. Steel guessed he was about 65 years old.
"Damn kid always getting his ass let in trouble. Like now, with a contract on his head and running around with some honky cop."
"This honky cop gonna help me get the man who put the contract out on me,"
I said.
"He a friend of mine, so you be polite."
"Just the two of you gonna take on Victor Borodini?"
Slim said. He snorted.
"I be at your funeral. You want me to kill yourselves? Why just let me turn you in? I could use a fast 25 grand.
"You're worth 25,000 to Victor Borodini?" Steel asked Ice. "He must want you real bad."
"Not half as bad as he want you,"
said Ice with a grin.
"You're worth a cool half mil. People down here sell their own mothers for a lot less than that.
Half a mil,
said Slim, glancing up in the rearview mirror.
You know that cyborg cop?
Yeah, that's me,
said Steel.
Shoot,
said Slim.
I ain't never been near so much money in my life. Look, why you say you drive you out to Long Island and turn you over to the Borodini? Save you the trouble of committing suicide.
What you do with all that money?
Asked Ice.
Buy me a boat and sail away to some damn island,
Slim said.
Warm beaches and young brown girls to take care of me in my old age.
They take care of you all right,
said Ice.
Man, your age, they do you in for sure.
Yeah, but what a way to go,
said Slim with a smile.
Don't let him fool you,
I said.
Slim got himself a stable full of fine young foxes. They take care of him real good.
He's a pimp,
said Steel with surprise.
I calls it entertainment broker,
Slim said hoarsely.
White folks from Midtown want some entertainment. I provides it. They get broker.
He cackled.
Slim one of the few independent in this part of town,
said Ice.
On account of he used to be a skull. The Bloods leave him alone to run on his own action. Some people don't like it, but ain't nothing they can do about it.
They can try,
said Slim.
I'm ready for him. Like that young blood, Akeem. Wants me to give the skulls a cut of my action now. Me, I was on the council when he was no more than a nasty gleam in some damn...
N-word, I'm not gonna say.
It's high. Young Bloods nowadays got no respect, no style. Taking orders for some white bread out on Long Island. Shit. So Akeem is still alive.
No thanks to you,
said Ice.
You got messed up bad that time you hit the skulls, took some shrapnel from one of your grenades, still carried around some pieces, cut his pretty little face up and made him lose an eye. You not one of his favorite people.
He's not one of mine either,
Steel said. It was growing darker, but Slim turned his lights off as the cab slowly turned into a side street near the piers. They were in a desolate area of the city, nothing but old abandoned warehouses and crumbled ruins. There was not a sign of life. Slim pulled the cab over to the curb and shut the engine off.
This it?
Asked Steel, looking around.
We walk from here,
said Ice.
Warehouse down at the far end of the block. There'll be guards posted.
Skulls?
Asked Steel.
Mostly,
Ice said.
Borodini got some men stationed there. Maybe three or four. All others be skulls.
How many?
Ice shrugged.
Maybe 10, 12. Don't know for sure. Could be more since that new shipment come in.
They got a lot of firepower there,
said Slim.
You sure you don't want to go in for some backup?
No,
said Steel. I'm going to take care of this myself. I want to be sure that Borodini hears about it. Ice, you wait here with Slim.
Like hell,
said Ice, opening up the car door.
I ain't no tour guide, policeman. Like I said, this here be a hands-on proposition.
I don't want to argue, Steel said. This isn't a safe area. Somebody should stay behind with Slim.
Slim take care of himself,
said Ice. Steel heard the sound of a bolt being drawn back. He glanced at Slim. The old man was holding a .45 caliber machine pistol.
You're not back in half an hour, brother. I'm gone,
said Slim.
Fair enough,
said Ice. He glanced at Steel.
We going, or are you and me going to stand here and argue some?
Steel stared at him for a moment, then nodded.
All right, but if you go down, I'm not stopping for you.
I hear you. Let's do it.
They moved off down the street, hugging the buildings, then cut through an alley and circled round behind the warehouse. From the outside, it looked no different from the other buildings that surrounded it. The entire area appeared deserted. There was no sign of any guards posted.
Boys must be sleeping on the job,
said Ice as they approached the back of the warehouse. He glanced around at the adjoining buildings up at the roof, but there was no sign of anyone.
Maybe they figured no one would be crazy enough to hit this place,
said Steel.
They figure wrong,
said Ice. As they spoke, a door at the side of the building opened, and two young black men in gang colors stepped out onto the alley. They lit up cigarettes. Steel and Ice drew back into the shadows, flattening themselves up against the building wall. There was a soft, barely audible whirring sound as the gun port in Steel's left hand slid open, and the barrel of the dart launcher protruded. Steel raised his arm, his eyes glowing with two red pinpoints, and his laser designator switched in, locking on the targets. There were two soft chuffing sounds as the poison-dipped darts whistled through the air, each one striking dead on. The two men crumpled to the ground without a sound.
Damn!
Said Ice. Steel turned towards him, his eyes still lit up with two small glowing dots. The effect was unsettling, to say the least.
Still feel like arguing with me?
He said with a smile. Ice stared at his glowing eyes, then glanced down at the barrel of the dart launcher. About 2 inches of it protruded from Steel's palm. There was a brief, soft whirring noise, and then a click as it retracted, the gun port covered with a sheath of polymer skin slipping back in place.
What the hell was that?
Asked Ice.
What you shoot them with?
Poison-tipped darts, said Steel.
Damn,
said Ice.
What other tricks you got up your sleeve?
A few, said Steel.
Like to get me one of those,
said Ice as they trotted towards the door.
Why didn't you ask Kiggins? Steel asked. I'm sure he'd be happy to cut off your arms and legs, take out your brain, and see what kind of new gizmos he could install.
Huh,
said Ice.
Might even be worth it.
Steele glanced at him. You're a weird man, Ice. Ice looked down at the bodies. He turned one over with his foot.
Don't know these two,
he said.
The team bringing in new blood.
There might be some friends of yours in there, said Steele.
If they in there, they ain't no friends of mine,
said Ice. You sure about that?
Don't worry about me, policeman,
Ice said.
I come here to take care of business, not seeing Auld Lang Syne.
He unholstered the big 44.
After you.
Steele turned up his hearing slightly and listened for a moment, then went through the door. Ice ducked in behind him, holding the weapon ready. It was mostly dark inside the warehouse, with only a few lights turned on, mounted overhead. They stood in an open area, an aisle that ran the entire length of the warehouse. Directly across from them, about 15 feet away, stood ranks of heavy steel shelving, 20 feet high, row upon row of them, running the length of the building. Steele ran across the open area into one of the aisles between the shelves. The shelves held mostly wooden crates and steel boxes, stenciled with labels. Steele read one of them.
Rocket launchers,
he said. He glanced at a crate on one of the other shelves.
AR-30 assault rifles,
he said. He went down the rows, examining the crates.
Incendiary grenades, 50 caliber machine guns. There must be the stuff Higgins said he was hijacked from that federal ordnance depot. There's enough here to equip a small army. But where the hell's all their security?
He turned up his hearing. He heard the sound of laughter. Hey there, me again. Just popping in to let you know that this part's about to get pretty rough. Just wanted to forewarn you. Yo, man, come on. Don't go taking all day. Save me a piece of that. Hey, there's lots more left. Ain't that right, baby? He could hear the sounds of grunting and flesh, slapping against flesh. A glass bottle shattered. Steele's lips turned down in a grimace.
What is it?
Ice asked.
Sounds like they're having themselves a party, Steele said. Come on.
They moved between the rows of crates until they came to another aisle. Yet near the center of the warehouse, there were more crates stacked on the other side. They ducked back as someone passed, heading towards the back, a young gang member. As he walked, he zipped his fly. Come on, bitch, put some life into it. There was the sound of a slap, followed by a girl's grunt. Then,
eat shit, asshole.
Another slap, harder this time. Then another. Yo, man, take it easy. Don't go getting her all bloody. Fuck you, I ain't taking no lip from this.
C-word I'm not going to say.
Another slap. I know how to shut her up.
Ain't my kind of party,
I said, starting forward. Steele reached out and grabbed him by the shoulder. He pointed up. There was a glassed-in office area overhead, and to the right, accessible by two flights of stairs. Two white men stood at the window, looking down at what was going on below.
Think you can get up there without being spotted, Steele said.
Leave it to me,
said Ice. Moving silently, he headed off down between the aisles. Steele waited. Several moments later, he saw Ice softly tiptoeing up the stairs. The men up in the office were still intent on what was happening down below. He unslung his battle rifle and started to move closer. Ice was almost to the top of the stairs. Suddenly, the door to the office opened, and a man stepped out. Steele raised his rifle, but Ice lunged forward quickly and seized the man by the throat, lifting him right up off his feet. The man's legs jerked as Ice held him up, choking off any sound he might make, then snapped his neck. He carefully laid the body down on the landing and stepped up to the door. He stood outside it for a moment, listening, then opened the door softly and stepped through, ducking down out of sight. The two men at the open window were still intent on watching the spectacle down below. A moment later, Steele saw Ice rise up behind them. A hand went around each of their heads, covering their mouths, and Ice pulled them back, away from the window. Perhaps 5 seconds went by, then Ice appeared at the window, holding his 44. Steele stepped out into the light. Don't say I didn't warn you. There was a group of about a dozen black men dressed in gang colors standing around an office desk, on which lay the nude body of a young white girl. Her bare legs hung off at the desk, and one man stood between them, his pants down around his ankles. Two men stood on either side of the middle desk, holding her arms. Another man stood at the other end, his fly unzipped, forcing himself into the girl's mouth. She struggled, making gagging sounds.
Get away from her,
said Steele, leveling his rifle at them. The men around the desk spun around, looking at him with startled expressions. The two men, brutalizing the girl, froze, staring at him slack-jawed. Nobody moved.
I said get away from her!
Yo, man, take it easy, take it easy. Don't shoot. They started looking around, expecting to see other cops. Suddenly, the man who'd been sodomizing the girl screamed in agony. She had bitten down hard. He smashed his fist down into her face, and then a shot reverberated through the warehouse, and the top of his skull disintegrated. He collapsed to the floor. The man glanced up.
Ice!
One of them said.
You got it,
said Ice, aiming his gun down at them.
Now do like the man say. Back off from the girl.
You son of a bitch! You sold this out to the cops?!
You sold out to Borodini first,
said Ice.
Now I said, back off!
Behind him, Steele heard the bolts of an assault rifle being drawn back. Ice, get down! The glass up in the window shattered and rained down as bullets sprayed the office. Steele spun around and fired in the direction of the sound. The gunman, hidden down behind the crate, flew backwards. The men around the desk broke and scattered in all directions, all save one who grabbed the unconscious girl and yanked her up, using her as a shield. Drop it! He shouted. Drop it right now or I'll kill the bitch! He held a knife to her throat. Hold it! Steele shouted. Drop it! shouted the man. Drop the fucking gun! Steele dropped the rifle. He held out his left hand. Don't! He said. Don't do it! There was a soft whirring sound, and then the launcher fired. The dart whistled through the air and struck the man right between the eyes. The knife clattered to the floor as the man fell backwards. Steele picked up the rifle and ran to the girl. He crouched over her. She looked dazed. Her face was puffed up and bruised, where she'd been struck repeatedly, and blood came from her nose and mouth. Ice!
I'm okay.
Ice called down from the stairs outside the office. Then several assault rifles opened up at once on full automatic. Ice vaulted the railing and rolled over as he hit the floor. Bullets slammed to the desk and splintered the crates around him. Steele picked up the girl and ran, bent over, trying to shelter her with his body. Ice was right behind him. They took shelter behind several stacks of heavy wooden crates. The shooting stopped.
We in for it now,
said Ice.
Should have taken them out when you had the chance.
If I opened up on all of them, I might have hit the girl, said Steele. You all right?
Thanks to this,
said Ice, tapping his body armor where the bullets had struck his chest.
Bit sore, though.
Any ribs broken?
Don't think so.
Steele glanced at the unconscious, naked girl.
Give her your jacket!
I slipped his bullet-ridden jacket off and put it around her shoulders. Steele took a quick look at the crates around them. None of them was labeled. That's what it says. He drove his fist through the wood and reached inside. He pulled out a parcel and tore it open. White powder spilled out onto the floor. He dipped his finger into it and brought it to his lips.
Great,
he said with a grimace. An entire warehouse full of weapons, and we pick a crate of cocaine to hide behind.
At least we go out high,
said Ice. Ice! Someone called out. Ice, you hear me?
I hear you.
Give us the cop, man. Give us the cop, and we let you go.
Ice grinned.
You think they mean that?
Where's your backup, cop? Where they at, huh?
Steele handed Ice his rifle.
You know how to use one of these?
Squeeze this little trigger, right?
Yeah, right, said Steele Riley. I want you to take her out of here. Get her back to the cab. If they come after you, you and Slim get out of there.
What about you?
Don't worry about me. Just get her out of here. You understand?
They'd be watching the doors,
I said.
Who needs a door? Asked Steele.
He fired several rounds with his .45. Then when the answering fire came from the automatic weapons, he went over to the wall behind them. And while the shooting covered the sounds, he kicked right through it. Two more kicks, and there was an opening wide enough for them to get through. I stared at him with amazement. The shooting stopped again.
Move!
Said Steele. As Ice picked up the unconscious girl and went through the hole in the wall, Steele started moving. He turned his hearing up, listening to the sounds the gunmen made as they moved through the warehouse toward the spot where they'd been hiding. They had spread out, and as Steele moved, he kept track of their position, his cybernetic brain instantly pinpointing their locations from the sounds they made. One of them was about 20 feet to his right, moving towards him. Steele pressed up against one of the heavy metal shelves, waiting for him to get closer. As he came around the corner, Steele reached out with his left hand and plugged the assault rifle out of his grasp. Then he drove the butt of it through the man's face, pulverizing it. The man crumpled to the floor without a sound. Steele checked the rifle's magazine. It had about 15 rounds left. He bent over, quickly patted down the man's body, and found three more magazines. He slipped them into his pockets. Not that he was worried about running out of ammo. The entire warehouse was an arsenal. But that meant, of course, that the opposition had the same advantage. Even more so, because they probably knew where everything was. And though Steele was much harder to kill than an ordinary human being, he knew that he was not invulnerable. A headshot with an armor-piercing bullet fired at high velocity could penetrate his skull casing and damage his brain. The human organs in his chest were vulnerable, despite the nice steel ribs and polymer skin. And armor-piercing or higher explosive rounds could penetrate his body armor. He remembered the crates near the side entrance, the ones that held incendiary grenades. He started to make his way quickly to the other side of the warehouse. With his hearing turned up, he could hear the slightest sounds the others made. He knew exactly where they were, just as if he could see them. They were moving slowly in the stack of crates containing the cocaine, where Steele and Ice had been hiding moments earlier. They still hadn't realized that Ice and the girl had escaped, and that instead of being the hunters, they were now the hunted. Moving between the rows of crates, Steele easily avoided the gunmen, slipping around behind them. He found the crates containing the grenades. With one hand, he pulled one of the heavy crates out and dumped it on the floor, then ripped off the nailed-down lid. The noise he made instantly alerted the gunmen, and he heard them shouting to each other as they realized that he had slipped around behind them. He heard them quickly moving his way. He reached out into the crate and started filling his pockets with grenades. Bullets struck the crates around him. He ducked down and ran. As Ice had guessed, they had men covering the exits, and one of the nearest to the side door reached him first. Steele brought the assault rifle around and fired a burst, one-handed. The gunman was hurled back by the impact of the bullets. Steele started moving once again, weaving through the aisles. "Back there!" someone shouted. "You get him, Spike? Yo, Spike!" Steele pulled the pin and lobbed one of the grenades. His brain instantly computed the trajectory and distance, and his arm impelled the exact amount of force necessary. The grenade sailed up over the stacks of crates and landed right at their feet. "Jesus!" The grenade exploded. A huge blossom of flame lit up the warehouse as it washed over the crates, igniting them. The others opened fire. Steele kept moving fast, lobbing the grenades as he ran, dropping them exactly where the gunmen were. The explosions rocked the building. In moments, the entire warehouse was in flames. Steele threw the last of the grenades and ran for the door, firing as he went. The men guarding the door had fled when the explosions went off. With all the ordnance in the warehouse, they knew the entire building would go up like a bomb. He hit the street and kept on running. Automatic weapons opened up on him, and he heard the bullets whistling past him. He fired as he ran, emptying the clip. Without pausing, he slapped in one of his spares and kept running toward the end of the block. Ice and Slim were waiting for him. The girl was still unconscious in the back seat. "Move!" shouted Steele. He leaped into the cab, and Slim turned the key in the ignition. The starter motor whined.
"Come on, man,"
I said. The starter motor whined again. Suddenly, a howling figure came out hurtling from the darkness and landed on the hood of the cab. Mucus ran from his scarred nose, and saliva dribbled from his mouth as he screamed like a wounded beast. His clothes were tattered, with the scrofulous flesh showing through. His entire face and emaciated body were covered with hideous, pustulent sores.
"Screamer!"
Slim shouted, frantically rolling up his windows. The demented screamer howled and pounded furiously on the windshield. Blood spurted from his knuckles as the windshield cracked.
"Start the damn car!"
I shouted. Steele leaned out the window on the driver's side and emptied the magazine of the assault rifle, firing point blank into the screamer. The engine caught as the screamer fell back off the hood of the cab and Slim floored the accelerator. The tire spun and the cab lurched forward, skidding around. Several figures came running up out of the darkness, backlit by flames from the warehouse. They raised their weapons and started firing at the cab. Steele and Ice leaned out the window and returned fire as the cab slewed around. Then there was a tremendous explosion as the entire warehouse went up. More explosions followed in rapid succession, shooting huge fireballs up into the bright night sky. The gunmen on the street were knocked off their feet by the concussive force of the blasts. The cab raced down the cratered street, jolting over potholes, Slim fighting the wheel for control as they headed south down toward 125th Street. Behind them, the entire block was in flames.
"Bam!"
said Ice in an exultant tone as he looked out through the rear windshield.
"Man, that's one fine sight."
The girl in the seat beside him stirred, moaning. Steele turned around and looked at her. Her pale face was bruised and puffy. Her lip was cut and there was dried blood in her mouth. Ice had buttoned up the jacket around her. It fit her like a tent. Her long, bare legs were splayed out as she was slumped in the seat, and her unruly black hair was worn short. She had a long, sharp-featured face with pronounced cheekbones, and she was slim and small-breasted. She was perhaps 19 or 20 years old.
"Anybody have any idea who she is?"
Steele asked.
"She goes by the name of Raven,"
Slim said.
"You know her?"
Steele asked.
"Used to be in Rico's stable." "She's a hooker?" "Yeah, he tried to sell her to me a couple weeks back. I wasn't buying. That little girl packed one pack of trouble. Cut up some tricks real bad. Rico must have dumped her on the skulls. Teach her a lesson."
"They taught her, all right,"
I said grimly.
"Well, take her to a hospital,"
said Steele. The girl suddenly sat up with a start.
"It's okay, miss," Steele said. "It's over now. You're going to be all right."
She stared at them, a hard, feral expression on her battered face.
"It's okay. We'll take you to a hospital," said Steele.
She suddenly lunged for the door handle.
"Hey, you crazy?"
Ice grabbed her and yanked her back, then reached across her and pulled the door closed.
"You just sit back and relax, girl,"
he said.
"Ain't no one gonna hurt you."
She stared at him without a word.
"Man, what a look,"
said Ice.
"Take it easy," Steele told her. "You're gonna be all right. I'm a police officer. We'll get you some medical attention."
"No,"
she said.
"No hospital."
"You've been hurt," said Steele.
"I've been raped,"
she said, her lips curling down.
"So what? Ain't nothing new."
"We should get you looked at," Steele said.
"I've already been looked at and then some. No, no hospital. You take me there, I ain't gonna stay."
"All right," said Steele. "Where do you want us to take you? Where do you live?"
"Ain't got no place to live."
"Well, we can't just dump you on the street. What about you, Slim?"
Steele asked.
"Can you stay with any of your girls?"
"Not me, Jack,"
Slim said, shaking his head.
"I got me enough trouble."
He chuckled.
"You took her, man. Looks like you got her now."
End of chapter.